The kind of devil in Wakefield has been around a long time and knows humans pretty well, so feels empathy and sympathy for them. He's a middle European kind of devil. He's cultured, he's read books, he's gone to the opera, he's seen himself in many productions of Faust. He's been privy to all kinds of literary treatments of himself, so he's very unlike the apocalyptic devil of Mr. Falwell, for instance. He's a devil that is not interested so much in the apocalypse and the end of the world. It's a devil who's interested in the anguished human soul.
And I'm assuming this is more the, of how you think of the devil, because in your book you bring up the fact that he is sort of baffled by this way that people like Falwell have made him this very apocalyptic fellow.
Well, the devil is not happy with the bureaucracy of hell, which has become more corporate, just like the world that Wakefield moves in has become. Wakefield himself has various kinds of dilemmas, and he travels all over the country trying to figure out what he's about and what the country he lives in is about. And he finds it quite strange and somewhat this disorienting. And the devil who travels with him, although Wakefield doesn't know it many times, has the same problems and is fighting another kind of battle in the meta realms.
Now, when did you know that you wanted to be a writer? You've been writing for a long time, and was this something that you just knew you had to do?
I knew it when I was about 14 years old, and I wrote a poem in high school about the noises animals make, and I wrote a perfect frog stanza, which I couldn't recite to you in Romanian right now because I don't remember it. But after that, I knew I was good at something because I sure wasn't good at defending myself because there were a lot of bullies in my school, and I wasn't good at making stuff like my half brother. So I was good at imagining things and putting them down on paper.
Were there any writers that influenced you either by their style or philosophy?
Well, there are quite a few. I grew up in Romania, where I was born, and I didn't leave there until I was 19 years old. So there were a lot of Romanian writers and Romanian folk tales and the kind of Romanian magic. But we also had in complete translation the works of Mark Twain, for instance, who I read in Romanian. I think Twain was the one who gave me a whole other perspective on how you can keep your dignity in a world that's both absurd and hilariously hurtful. But the writers I read when I was growing up were the writers of the Romanian avant-garde between the two world wars. And they were people like Tristan Tzara, who went on to found the Dada movement in Zurich during World War I, and then joined the Surrealist movement and wrote in French. There were quite a few writers of Romanian origin who had made names for themselves in France, mainly as poets. And then there were others who were of another strain of the avant-garde, but they were all experimental writers, too. Writers who were trying to make something with language, with myth, with the more unclear aspects of the human soul.
Do you see yourself as an experimental writer?
Well, I mean, you have to be if you're alive, because life is an experiment. You just move on, and you have no idea what's going to happen. If we had a plan. And there are writers who have plans, then I can guarantee you they'll write something very boring and their life will be very predictable. I mean, you have to stay open to what happens. And what happens is surprising. And I mean, yes, all writing, if it's good, it's experimental.
You left Romania when you were 19. It was rightist Ceausescu was coming to power, and then you returned after the revolution. What was it like for you to go back to Romania?
Well, I returned right during the revolution because I was on assignment from NPR and ABC News to cover, quote unquote, the events over there. So it was partly a job, but mainly it was a sentimental occasion. I was very moved to be back there, to hear the language again, to smell things again. I went back to my hometown, which is a medieval old town. And I immediately remembered the smells of my childhood, and the language seemed very familiar. So I had a variety of emotions. NPR, of course, thought I was there to do a job. I was there for other subversive reasons.
You're quite prolific. You write poems and novels like Wakefield and The Blood Countess and essays, and you edit The Exquisite Corpse, as well as do your commentaries for All Things Considered. Do you ever worry that you're going to stretch yourself too thin creatively?
I think I'm really lazy, actually, and I don't think that. I mean, I even have time to watch TV. I saw this runway show with these models on it, but I don't think any of these things that a writer does really are part of not part of the main object, which is to try and stay awake and describe or understand the world as it goes past you. The magazine, that's Exquisite Corpse, is really social service. I met and know a lot of writers, and I like to publish them in the magazine, and they send their works, and it's my way of keeping in touch with a national community of writers. So that's, you know, both, you know, for that selfish reason and for reasons of somewhat altruistic, I do the magazine. But all the rest is just forms of writing, and some things come as poems, and some things can be done any other way except novels. And some things are clearly essays because they're short and all the sentences are finished.
Is there any sort of overall theme that shows up in your writings, whether it's, you know, something you do on purpose or just happens to be there?
Well, I have this critic now, this guy named Kirby Olsen, who just wrote a book called Andrei Codrescu and the Myth of America. It's coming out in a month or so from some academic press. And Kirby has identified all kinds of themes. It's a scary thing to read. I read it once, and then I put it under something.
It's not something that you're, you know, out there saying, I have to include this in my writings. It just, if there's themes, they're there subconsciously.
Well, no, I don't worry about it. I just try to keep it real and stay awake, as I've said. But, you know, occasionally I'll put a person or a building in a poem if they pay me enough.
No, you teach English at Louisiana State University and deal with students. What sort of things do you tell your students about writing?
I tell them a variety of things. I tell them to read in the first place because they don't read enough, and I make them long lists that bankrupt them and cause them to have no time for anything else, like writing. So my hope is that they will read enough so they won't have time to write. And I even occasionally pay them not to write. You know, it's like $2 a poem and maybe $5 a story. It costs me, but then I have peace of mind. You know, like the government pays farmers not to grow things. It's a good thing to do.
Now, you mentioned that you think that you're lazy as a writer. I mean, is there anything about writing that you find difficult, that you think is hard?
Well, what's hard about a certain kind of writing is delivering on deadline. I write a radio column, and it is also a newspaper column. It's a paragraph longer in the newspaper, and it does have to be in there every Sunday, so that's hard. Some of the journalistic assignments I've done were hard because I did have to finish them on deadline. So, yes, I mean, if you move in the larger world, there are things that are hard. Typing, no.
Do you have a particular style that you prefer, or do you just like to write?
Well, I like to be deep like the loch where the Loch Ness lives, and elegant like a swan in my style. But no, I would say that the style is sort of an expression of content, and whatever style people do happen to see, it's because what I'm writing about is interesting enough.